My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
We need you now. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. Give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
What do computer games and clothing have to do with the UK's rate decision today? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. But first, lawyers for the Chinese technology giant Huawei are scheduled to be in a U.S. federal court today. They first filed a lawsuit in March attempting to undo a law that bans American government agencies and contractors from buying or using their equipment over national security fears. The BBC's Karishma Viswani has more.
Huawei's lawyers will aim to convince a U.S. court that an American law to ban its products from being used by government agencies is unconstitutional. The company says the U.S. law is an abuse of the lawmaking process and must be set aside. But legal experts say it's highly unlikely the ban will be overturned because of how sensitive the issue of national security with regards to Chinese technology is in the United States. All of this comes as the company launched its first flagship phone without the Google Android operating system, a consequence of another U.S. law which bans American firms from selling their technology to Huawei.
Karishma Viswani, let's do the numbers. Global shares are broadly mixed after the OECD cut its global growth forecasts to 2.9% from 3.2%. Over in China, 10,000 tons of frozen pork will be released from central reserves today. That's as the country tries to stabilize prices to cope with a virus that's killed millions of pigs. Another day, another round of rate decisions. Following Japan, Indonesia, Norway, and Switzerland today, it's the UK's turn this afternoon. While Governor Mark Carney has said rates could rise in the next couple of years, for now, they're set to hold steady. Karen Ward, chief market strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management, explains why.
If we go back to early 2016, the Bank of England was actually expected to move with the Fed. So interest rates would have been, I think, a lot higher had we not have had the outcome of the Brexit referendum. But of course we did. And therefore, the Bank of England's been on hold, paralyzed ever since.
Now, if we look at inflation, it slipped below the central bank's target in August to the lowest level since 2016. Interestingly, clothing and computer game prices fell during the month. Those are things consumers buy frequently. So shouldn't these kinds of price drops be good for consumers, therefore good for the economy?
Well, I think this is one of the broader questions about whether central banks should necessarily worry about low inflation. And I think it does depend on whether it's a sign of strong supply or whether it's a signal of problems in demand. I think that the weakness we saw yesterday was a few temporary distortions, whereas overall, UK inflation has actually held up above target for quite a substantial period of time.
But as you said, Brexit, of course, is one of the biggest headwinds facing this economy. How is Mark Carney navigating the uncertainty?
By doing nothing, essentially. I think there is a very binary outlook for the UK. If Boris Johnson manages to strike an acceptable deal in the next couple of weeks with the EU, then the outlook for the UK, I think, is pretty good. If that deal can't be struck, and we are looking at a period of weakness in the Bank of England, actually look at cutting interest rates.
Karen Ward, chief market strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Facebook this week unveiled plans for an independent oversight board to decide how the network is moderated. But often lost in the discussion about harmful content are the people whose job it is to decide whether those images and videos even make it onto your feed in the first place. The BBC's Ivana Davidovich reports.
There are hundreds of thousands of moderators around the world helping companies weed out disturbing content. Sean Spiegel worked as an online content moderator for 6 months back in 2018. He was employed by a company called Cognizant in Florida, who had a contract with Facebook.
When you see death and child abuse and child pornography and just the worst of humanity every single day, it really gets to you. The one time I did go to see a psychiatrist that was within the building, he flat out told me, I don't know how to help you guys.
Facebook executives claim they are trying to get their act together. One of the company's vice presidents, Arun Chandra, was brought in especially to focus on the working conditions of their 30,000-strong moderator workforce employed by various subcontractors, mostly in the United States, India, and the Philippines.
My experience in talking to these reviewers, I've spoken to hundreds of them in the last 6 months, has been very different than the examples that are being conveyed. Every site would have counselors available on site during every shift. Recreational rooms that are provided where people can have recreational breaks. Most recently in the United States, Facebook revised the pay standards for all of its contingent workers.
I approached Cognizant for comment, but they have not responded. It is difficult to imagine a sustainable way of making lives better for the workers. So, is there a case to rethink the business model of social media companies? Sarah Roberts, a UCLA professor who has just published a book about content moderation, seems to think so.
It is a dangerous prospect for the companies who have built up a global user base predicated on the notion that we should all be able to do and say and share and show and see whatever our heart desires pretty much at all times. And to come back 15 years on and say, wait a minute, that might not be the best for the health of the world, much less the health of our companies, is going to be a pretty tall order.
She says the solution might lie in stricter regulation from governments around the world. But while the debate rages on, real people, like Sean Spiegel, live with the consequences of cleaning up our dirty work online. I'm the BBC's Ivana Davidovich for Marketplace.
Finally, two young girls from England are the latest warriors in the battle against single-use plastics. They're the brains behind a petition calling for McDonald's and Burger King to ditch plastic kids' meals toys. McDonald's will give families a choice between a toy and fruit, while BK will take old toys and melt them down for other uses. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.